Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Living Mythology, I am proud to bring you the Pep Talk, Adventures in Pop Culture with John Carl Pepe. But first, a legend of Hercules. I was delighted when the Lion of Olympus finally made an appearance during the New 52 phase of DC Comics. In most previous DC incarnations, Hercules was often portrayed as a rogue or a villain. He did attain heroic stature in a post-apocalyptic Earth that has long since been wiped out of existence. In one timeline, he was even revealed to be Superman, unstuck in linear time, while in other realities, he was Superman's rival for the affections of Lois Lane. In Aquaman 29 and 30, it was revealed that long ago, in mythic times, the son of Zeus was treacherously trapped in hell by the king of Atlantis after helping the Atlanteans capture and confine the monstrous giant-born, creatures too hideous to be enshrined in myth. Hercules was eventually overcome and his mind was warped by the giant-born, and he's transformed into a weapon for their vengeance. When the giant-born were released into our world, the man-god of old was pitted against Aquaman, Atlantis' current king. Addled and haunted by memories of his true nature as a hero, Hercules was defeated and locked inside a fiery labyrinth. Alas, he was left there when the DC Universe mutated once again. Perhaps one day we'll get a follow-up tale. And now, John Carl Pepe. Greetings, John Carl Pepe. How are you, sir?
Very good. Greetings and welcome, Hercules. Yes, the ever changing DC universe. I loved I loved what you put out there. That was a good address. The bygone days of the New 52. Well, hello everybody. Welcome to the Pep Talk. Here we are, early spring, and one of the great things about spring are those constants, those things that you look forward to every year. One such thing is baseball, which we have coming up in a couple weeks after a much debated delay. Another great constant that I always look forward to, and unfortunately have not had a chance to be there the last couple years, or at least the last one. I think no one got to be there for the last couple before that, but is the Chiller Theater Expo in Parsippany, New Jersey, and that is a constant that you can always look forward to at the end of April and the end of October. And one of the pleasures of Chiller Theater is not only getting to meet, you know, people that you you grew up watching, because it is a wonderful nostalgia convention, a great chance to meet celebrities, get those photo ops, and also, you know, there's a great dealer's room. It's a really, really cool time to like look for those, you know, old 8-inch Mego figures or those vinyl records or, you know, those old shows that you're looking for and posters and paraphernalia. But the people you meet at Chiller and the people that help make Chiller happen. And one such person is my guest tonight that I'm very honored to have. His name is Stuart Hirsch, and I think he has the coolest job in the world, which we'll get into. Stuart, how are you? I'm happy and honored to have you here tonight.
Well, thank you. Wow, such an introduction. I'm flattered.
Oh, well, there'll be more flattery because I kept that one short because I figured let's get into this.
That's really cool. So, you know, I'm over. Yeah. I went over to see. I'm over in New Jersey at the Hyatt for the Beatles convention. What do they call it now? It used to be called Beatle Fest. Now it's called the Fest for Beatles fans. And
cool.
I came to see it this weekend, and so now I'm sitting in what used to be their art room, showing their Beatle art pieces, and it's closed. And I figured I'd come into this little quiet room, and so I'm sitting in this. This stripped down room now in a chair to do this interview. I needed a quiet space.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Yeah, it's always interesting to see the after breakdown at like a convention. I've worked a couple conventions like New York Comic Con. It's so insane to see like how all of that insanity, all of that crazy stuff, that is all that eye candy and stuff just gets broken down and you have a big empty hall, you know.
And cool. It's still going. They got like a whole show going on in the other room, you know, but
oh, well.
it's that's why I had to go into this little thing and close the doors off. But anyhow, are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good. It has been a few years. We didn't make it to the last Chiller, which was the first one back after a while.
Yes. I was there.
So a little, well, again, a little background. Stuart is your manager, and you bring guests to conventions predominantly is what you do. I think you could probably explain what you do a lot better than I.
I think the titles have been weird. You know, some people call me an agent, some people call me a booker, some people call me a handler. But I, essentially, you know, I choose guests that I think would be great for the convention, and then I run them by, you know, the creator of Chiller Theater Expo, Kevin Clement, and he usually is pretty great and pretty gung ho with who I want to bring in, and I've been lucky enough to have been bringing guests to Chiller, you know, since probably about 17, 18 years now.
Okay, wow, yeah. So not quite the entire 30 years, but you have become a staple at this point. Now, Chiller's not the only show that you do. You do other shows in the area, I gather?
I'm doing, you know, it's funny because Chiller is my constant. Like, that's my home base.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been doing, you know, I've done shows in Massachusetts. I've done the Hollywood show out in Hollywood. I just did their last one before the pandemic. I haven't been to any of the newer ones there. And then there's this car show that's coming up this summer that happens every summer in the New Jersey area called Dead Man's Curve. And
cool.
they've been doing stuff for about 10 years, and it was beyond me why they never had Jan and Dean, you know, at the Dead Man's Curve. That was their song. So
they've
had some great, great guests in the past. They've had like Mickey Dolenz and John Schneider and blah, 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 Peter Noon, you know. But I finally, through my friend Butch Patrick, Eddie Munster, who really is a good, good friend of mine, I'm bringing in Dean Torrance, the original Dean of Jan and Dean, to be at that car show this summer. It's around Labor Day. Labor Day is when it is, Labor Day weekend.
Very cool. Very cool. And look at you, you know, to come up with a first for the Dead Man's Curve car show, like, that they didn't even think of or pursue.
Yeah.
Or...
you know, they're great guys and stuff. Yeah, but I just don't know why they didn't
think about that.
Yeah, so, you know, Dean is, he just turned 82, he's in great shape, he still performs with his band, and he's going to be there, you know, they're going to set up some Corvettes, like old classic Corvettes around him, and he'll be taking pictures and signing autographs, yeah.
Oh, cool. I love a car show, like a nice little car show like that you find in New Jersey or Vermont or a few that I've gone to. Those are really fun.
Yeah,
when they have a guest there, it adds an extra punch, and it makes a nice day, you know, a nice spring day there.
Absolutely.
For Labor Day weekend, yeah.
Fall
day.
Sure.
Labor Day or Memorial Day? Let's get it. I want to get it right. Labor Day or Memorial
Labor
Day?
Labor Day weekend.
Labor Day, so for the fall, yeah. So, put that on your calendars, folks. Dead Man's Curve. That's
September,
really cool.
That's September. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, late September, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so, but that's the thing is that sort of thinking, you know, the lineups that you put together for Chiller have really been, you know, that sort of, I don't want to say out-of-the-box thinking, because it's really – inside the television tube thinking. You've done Perfect Strangers reunion, right? Bronson Pinch Show. And,
yeah, I got Bronson Pinch Show and Mark Lynn Baker. I did a Love Boat reunion with Gavin McLeod and Ted Lange and I'm blanking out on names, Bernie Coppell and Jill Whalen. So that was the Love Boat reunion. And when we had Bernie Coppell there, who played Doc on the Love Boat, I said, why not? He played Siegfried on Get Smart. I brought Barbara Feldon in at the same time, and we had a Get Smart reunion and a Love Boat reunion together. One of the last Chillers before the pandemic, I brought out the three surviving members, the guys that were in the costumes that were the Banana Splits.
Yep.
and they hadn't been together in 50 years. Coming up at this next one, I've got another 50-year anniversary reunion. I'm bringing in the kids from Zoom,
the TV show Zoom from PBS.
Yeah. Yes, we're gonna zoom, and once you get that in your head, you're stuck with it for the rest of the week.
And you're done. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, growing it's funny. So I was I'm a '75 baby, right? So
there you go.
So there was Sesame Street and Electric Company, right? And
So
Zoom was a little bit for the older crowds, like so where my siblings were, because I was I'm the youngest by 10 years, and then there's two above, four of us total. So my intake, right, my cultural intake growing up was from the older, you know, the older siblings. So they were like Zoom. When I was Sesame Street, they were Zoom, you know. And then by the time I got to Zoom age, Zoom was no longer running as heavily as it used to. And I think where I was at, it was replaced by 3-2-1 contact. I remember going Sesame Street, Electric Company, 3-2-1 contact with like a little bit of Zoom sprinkled in. So I know that opening. I know that song. It was an educational program being on PBS.
But it was ran by kids. That was the cool thing about Zoom. It was all kids running the show. It was all kids on camera, no adults on camera. And they would do nothing but read other kids' letters for suggestions and ideas for the show. And they would use them. The people would send in, you know, why don't you do this? Why don't you do this kind of a skit? They would send in in fact, one of the people coming in my Zoom reunion was in the third season of Zoom. Her name is Donna. And she had sent in a skit for them to do before she was even a Zoom cast member. She just wrote in.
They did
her skit. So she was one of the first people to write something for them. And there's another cool thing is I saw a Best of Zoom thing recently, or it's on YouTube or something. And there was this letter from this other guy, maybe a drawing or something, that was sent in by a guy named Wally Collins. Wally Collins today is a stand-up comedian, and he's been around for a while. And so I saw this little bit, and I took the clip of it, and I sent it to him through Facebook, and I said, dude, is this you? And he said, holy crap, yes, that's me. And I said, great. I said, I'm reuniting the kids from Zoom. And he was like, oh, my God. You know, it's funny. Zoom is one of those things. It was in its place. It was in its time. It had more viewers than Sesame Street when it first came out. But you just don't know. You know, it's one of those things, either you got it or you don't get it because of the time, you know, your age and the range of where you were. Leon, who is one of the guys who I'm bringing in this reunion, Leon Mobley, if you look him up, look up Leon Mobley, everybody. Leon Mobley is a drummer and percussionist who has played with the best and has toured with the best. He's currently touring with Ben Harper and the Innocent Criminals. And he just came back from California, and he saw Billy Bob Thornton out there, was working on something with him. And he says, he comes over, he tells him he's Leon from Zoom. He goes, oh my God. He said he wouldn't shut up about Zoom the whole time that he was with him.
That's great. Yeah. It's amazing that impact that, and that's really cool to know that, you know, you always hear about the child actor curse, right? And that these kids in a lot of ways didn't succumb to that. And in these cases, you know, to hear these stories about them as adults is always really good and inspiring, you know.
But that's why these things are so good. These conventions are so good now because the child actors that came, you know, they massaged their egos as a kid and then they spit them out, you know, later on in life. Now they're kind of getting a little bit back, you know, they're coming out to these conventions, and one at a time people are lining up at the table to meet them, to get pictures with them, to get an autograph from them, and to tell them what an impact their show had on their lives. And it's the greatest feeling from sitting on the other side of the table and watching these fans come up one by one and the smiles on their faces. I brought in Carol and Paula from the Magic Garden. Were you there for that?
Yeah, I did. I definitely remember you brought them because I was going to touch on that.
Am I running? I'm running too far with this. Go ahead.
I want to be like get out of my head because you're hitting things that I'm like. So you know, okay. So you just what you just said. I fist pumped just before you went to the Carol and Paula. I fist pumped because what you just said is exactly why I think you have the coolest job in the world. You deliver joy. Right, you and that's how you see it, like from the other side of the table. That the look on people's faces when they get to see these people that informed their growing up. This the whole theme is living mythology. I mean, these are mythological figures, right? We have this perception of who they are, and
yes.
to be able to say thank you, right? To say thank you.
This
to
is
say,
yes.
you know,
to me, it's a chance for these people who grew up with their friends on TV to take a step into the television now and actually shake their hand and take a picture with them and get to talk to them. It's really going into that other dimension, and it's wonderful. And the thing that I'm really happy and proud to say about Chiller, unlike a lot of other conventions, there's a lot of conventions out there where the guys that run them, and I'm not trying to burn any bridges, I'm not naming any names, but guys that run some of these conventions are all, they're just money and numbers and it's all, you know, calculations. I Kevin Clement, who created Chiller, was a fan, was a guy who came
exactly.
to conventions, who stood on lines. And when I talked to him, I will never forget, he said to me early on in all of this, he said, I do this to bring people back to their happy places. I do this to bring happiness to people, and he's genuine. He is so genuine that it's good to know. That's why Chiller feels it doesn't feel like a cattle call kind of a environment. It feels like a party when you're there.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. Yeah, and you know, especially you know, when you do, you have those opportunities after you know, after the convention proper, the Saturday night concerts, right? And
yes.
a lot of the guests go to there, and you can sit there and you can have a drink with somebody, you know, and enjoy a really cool rock and roll concert. You get to see Kevin play, you know.
Absolutely, Kevin
really
and
enjoys.
His band, the Dead Elvi.
Yeah.
Yes,
and,
so he gets to back up some of his favorite people like Mickey Dolenz and stuff. He loves that.
Yeah, and it's
you know,
you're right. It really is
great.
A party, you know, and every now and then, like a party should, it does go off the rails a little bit. I think two instances that I was fortunate to be at for the Saturday night Chiller was Richard Dreyfuss. I don't know if you remember that Richard Dreyfuss went on that political rant and the great thing about Chiller is that it is not political at all. Like, you know,
and so here's Richard Dreyfuss.
Promoting this international Do Nothing Day or something, you know. What if that, like,
it was,
you know,
something with
ATM,
the schools
everybody
and
stop
the,
flying
and was,
planes and stop.
And he was just pacing back and forth doing this rambling speech. And, you know, it was going over everybody's head there. But then, you know, we were all trying because we were like, wait a minute, this is Richard Dreyfuss. Maybe we should listen to him. But it was like, after a little
bit
of that, it was like, okay, let's get the show. Yeah, that night was a lot of is this a bit, because following Richard Dreyfuss, we had Tony Clifton. Wasn't that the same show?
No, Tony Clifton, I think, was the next year. Because
oh, was
the thing
it?
Is,
oh, okay.
Yeah, because the curious thing about the Richard Dreyfuss thing, and again, you're right, nobody got it. They were heckling him. He was like, tamp it down. I got something to say, you know. And you're right, yeah, people were like, all right, well, let's see what he has to say. Nobody recorded that. Because this was, I think, before
everybody had
a cell phone. I've tried looking for this on YouTube. I can't find it. And so that's why I know.
Because
Tony Clifton was video chronicled by previous guest and my good friend, and you know him too, Bart Capuano. And so Bart has a great video out there that's like a 45-minute. I will put a link somewhere on the
Now,
on the
do you want to tell the Tony Clifton story and I'll add to it, or do you want me to tell you what you want me to tell them what happened when Tony got on stage?
Oh, yeah, well, I want to put a button on the Richard Dreyfuss thing because the reason I know is Bart videotapes all of the Tony Clifton thing and really put a great video about the experience of Chiller and what that weekend is like. The whole thing is cut really well. But the reason – and Bart was videotaping Bart was videotaping at the Chiller with Richard Dreyfuss, except Bart had fallen asleep in the corner of the restaurant while the Richard Dreyfuss was going on with his camera next to him. So the videographer missed it all, you know? That's one of Bart's mutant abilities. He can fall asleep wherever, in any spot.
Jackie Gleason used to be able to do that. Yes.
He used to be able to do that. Nice.
Yes. Wow.
So I am a very big Andy Kaufman fan, and there was an opportunity a few years ago, about 10 years ago, where Tony Clifton was out and just playing shows, right?
He did B.B. King's.
I had the opportunity to see him at Santo's Party House, I think in 2009, 2 years before you got him at Chiller.
I was there.
Were you there?
That's the one where I think I left. I thought the show was over, but then somebody
went
to like 5 in the morning.
They were trying to kick him out. I was there for every second, Stuart. I was there for every second.
Because I followed him from B.B. King's. I followed him to the Pittsburgh show, to another one. I was so entranced by this. And I remember standing, because I'm such a huge Kaufman fan, I remember waiting outside of B.B. King's going, okay, I got it. I got to see him. He's got to cut. Bob Smoot has got to come out. And he never came out. And I'm saying, what the hell happened here? How did this not? And then I went to another gig, and they were keeping that whole mystique going. It was done so well. Just the way he did that. And so I called up Kevin and I said, Kevin, how would you like to have Tony Clifton? And Kevin said, oh my God, really? And I said, yeah. And he loved the idea. And I said, okay, well then we've got to do this Tony Clifton style. I need you to put him up at the top as special guest. And so that's how he was billed. Over all these great celebrity names, Tony Clifton was the special guest at the top. Yeah.
As it should be. Yeah, it was. It really did. He really did the Tony Clifton through and through with that weekend, and really made it about himself in so many ways.
Oh yeah.
And was also the headliner in his mind, yes, the headliner for the Saturday night concert.
Do you want to recount the show? Because it was –
Well, I was
– go ahead.
I'm going to say this, and I'll let you go. Not only is it historic for his first convention appearance, especially at Chiller, it is also his last Chiller convention appearance.
Yes. Oh, my God. And he – it turned out that Gary Busey was at the same show.
Yeah,
and they were friends, and I had no idea. So Gary and his son there, Jake Busey, they were both there, and next thing I'm in this whole surreal world now. You know, I'm sitting at a round dinner table at Ruth Chris Steakhouse there with Tony Clifton in Tony Clifton, like he's dressed as Tony Clifton, and Gary Busey next to him. Gary ordered something. I forgot what it was, some old-fashioned kind of dessert thing. And I remember Gary licking the plate and just putting it down in front of us and going, yep, they can put that right back on the shelf now. You know? I'm like, okay. there were a lot of really interesting moments there with the Tony Clifton thing. There was a guy at the next table was Britt Eklund. And there was a guy who was a regular guy. I don't know what his name was, but he was an elderly man. And he came up to Britt Eklund's table, and I'm looking over, you know, me and Tony are both looking over, and this guy comes up to Britt Eklund, and then he falls to the ground. And now the paramedic guys are coming in, and he's turning blue. And they take the guy out, and I look over at Brett, and I go, "You still got it?" And her face is like, her eyes got really wide. Like, I was like scared to death. You know, but you know, long story short, the guy came back next convention, and he said it was one of those diabetic things. So sitting with Tony at the convention. So then they set up the stage for the concert, and now it's Tony Clifton's time to get up there, and Tony goes up onto the stage, and I had no idea what he was going to do. And, you know, as usual, and he walks up to the mic and he goes, "I heard there's no smoking in the place." And he takes a cigarette out and lights it. And now I have this guy next to me, the security guy. See, I don't know if I told you this whole story from my angle. I'm in the audience, and the security guy side stage is now ready to run up. He's like, "Oh, no, this guy's drunk. I got to get him off the stage." No. I said, Don't do that. It's an act. He says, No. I go. So I kept him at bay. I said, "Okay." I said, so he takes the cigarette and he flicks it out over the, into the audience now. Now the guy, the security guy, runs and jumps on it to smother it. Okay. And then he takes his, he's drinking a drink in a glass, and he takes it and he just throws it out, the drink, over the audience, into the audience.
Yeah.
Well, he threw it with such might. I don't know how he did this. You couldn't do this for a prize. He threw it with such might that it went over onto the board, the soundboard that the woman was running at the back of the room, and shorted
the
board
audience
out.
Short hits the soundboard and shorts it out. Yeah, clears the audience.
Shorts,
you're right. It was an amazing throw.
shorts the board out, and she's looking at me, and I'm next to her, and I'm going, no, don't worry. I'm like trying until that happens, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on now, you know. And I'm going, just relax. You'll get this under control. And then he does something else. Oh, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, in the middle of the show, Jake Busey walks up with a hat over, you know, like a cap. So down over his face, so you couldn't really see it was him. And he goes up starting some shtick with him, like, "Hey, Tony, you're a jerk." And Tony goes, "Oh, yeah." You know, and he reaches over, and now he's like, you know, at it with him. And now the security guard again is going, I got to get him off the stage. I got to get him off the stage. I'm going to get the police. And I'm like, no, you can't. And so finally he's done with his bit, and he comes off the stage. And he's now, the show is going on, and they're doing the next thing, and he comes off, and he sits in this lounge chair down a hallway from where the stage was, and he's just plopped in this chair, and dark glasses, everything. And I go over to him, and I go, and he goes, "Never again." He goes, "That sucked. I was terrible." I go, "Are you kidding me?" I go, "I had to keep a security guard away. He was going to get the cops to get you off the stage." And he sits upright in the chair with a big smile on his face. And he goes, "Really?" And
that made his night. He expressed that he did feel like that the band wasn't, you know, he was out of step with, he was, you know, it was weird. It was like this. So long story short, at some point that night, we get approached by Jeremy, right? Jeremy Johnson.
Right, sure. His sidekick.
Tony's man.
Yeah,
his sidekick,
right.
Slash, you know, videographer, and just all around great guy. And he goes, "Tony Clifton wants to see you guys up someone else's hotel room, not even Tony's, but some people were getting married in one of the rooms at the hotel that Chiller was at. and Tony they're having a big wedding party at in their hotel room.
Tony Clifton, I didn't even know about this.
Had Jeremy invite us up, and we're hanging out with Tony Clifton in somebody else's room until 4 in the morning, because that's how you roll with Tony Clifton. Like, the man is
unstoppable. Oh, my God. Why didn't Jeremy invite me? Okay.
I don't know. I'm sorry to hurt your feelings. It was a milestone because I was really entrenched in that scene. Like, I had, you know, I was Tony Clifton, that one of the chillers, and I gave him the pictures. I got to interview him earlier that day. And so, you know, I think it was because I don't know, maybe I'm telling tales out of school. And I hope no one gets mad at me for saying this on this show. But as we're hanging out with him in that hotel room, the mask flips and it's Bob talking, you know, I wrote this book and with Tony's face. And it was just, that was a very bizarre experience. It was really like a little too close behind the, too much of a look behind the veil. But it was fascinating. It was very cool.
That happened to me when I was sitting with him during the weekend. Cause I told Tony that my cousin was Sammy Petrello. My first cousin was Sammy Petrello, who was the star of Bela Lugosi Meets a Brooklyn Gorilla, a huge cult movie. And if you saw the movie, if you haven't seen the movie, see it. If you saw the movie, you would swear you were watching Jerry Lewis. That was my cousin Sammy.
Right.
Okay. So Sammy went on to do comedy stuff in a lot of clubs and stuff, and had a big gig in Pittsburgh in later years. So Tony turns to me and goes, well, and he was trying to talk in third person. He was like, well, there was this young guy who was struggling as a magician, and Sammy gave him a break in his shows. And essentially he was telling me Sammy gave him his first break doing magic.
Yeah.
When he was Bob Smuda, you know.
Yeah.
But let's go one step more. And, you know, now that you opened up that little can of worms, because it's all – you know, it is what it is. Jeremy says to me, you know, at the end of the weekend, Jeremy says to me, he goes, Bob wants to come down, you know, and talk to you and hang with you a little bit at the bar over here. So he comes down and he goes, I got something for you. And I go, what do you got? And he gives me Tony's nose.
It was Bob giving me Tony's nose. That's amazing. Oh, that's great.
And I, to this day, I have Tony Clifton's nose in a baggie, like on my dresser.
I would have that encased in glass,
like one of those little, one of those little like baseball cases, but like a little tiny one, for the nose. Yeah, but I was like, oh my God, that is the coolest thing I think I ever got from anybody.
That's so cool. So, that's, you know, he made a point that, like, you know, people had a good time, at least the people that got it, you know.
Absolutely.
And you know, that weekend, definitely it was, you know, it was Bob Zmuda. I think we all can say that, like you said. But that night at Santos Party House, Stuart, I am convinced that there were two guys playing Tony that night at Santos.
No, it's never happened yet, as far as I know. It's been Bob all the way. And when I heard from a friend who stayed there till 4 in the morning, you know, he went till 4 in the morning. I was like, oh my, that is just. And his act was so great. Tony Clifton act, if you guys didn't get to see it, who are listening, and I just got to tell you a little piece of the show. He does this whole thing about this whole tribute to Gordon Lightfoot passing away, and he sings the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. It does the whole show. The whole song through with pictures, you know, they're showing slides and he's singing and he's doing this the entire thing, and he goes, may he rest in peace, the great Gordon Lightfoot. And you know, and you leave there going, oh my God, you know. And I went back home and I remember going to my computer and going, I gotta read the details on his death. And he was still alive. There was nothing wrong with Gordon Lightfoot. There was
That was the bit. I know. Oh, it's, yeah. Tony, if you're listening, come back. Come back and perform again, because you're a class act.
Absolutely.
All the way.
Absolutely. The last gig he did, he came in and did the Iridium. That's the last gig he did a few years back.
Yeah.
Very cool guy.
So, yeah, absolutely.
How much time we got
you,
left? Like 5 minutes? I've been rambling.
A little under half an hour. We're good.
Okay.
So
okay.
I just wanted to touch back a little bit on Magic Garden. You brought them back at, I think, the last chiller before the world blip.
Was that them at the last one, or was the Banana Splits the last one?
Maybe it was the Banana Splits, because they were the one before Banana Splits. I think you might be right about that. I noticed the other day that they're bringing the show back as an animated series.
In an animated series. What happened was I booked them at a really cool little place, and attending the show that night were these producers from, like, Sesame Street, like you know, that company. And mm-hmm. they met with them and said that they had this idea for them to do an animated version of the Magic Garden. I mean, look, they could still get away with it. It's God bless them. I mean, Carol just turned like 81, I think. And you would look at them. You do not see these ages at all. They are the magic. They are Carol and Paula and their songs and their voices and everything. But yes, that's something that's going to be happening soon.
And I think that's cool. I think way you help facilitate that. You help that, you know, by kind of putting people in the right place at the right time, right? So.
Yeah. And when they were at Chiller, now, you know, I mean, look, I was bringing in children-related guests. You know, look, my first guest at Chiller was Bobby Boris Pickett, because I managed him. And, mm-hmm. I got him into Chiller.
Another very good friend of yours as well. Like, as you mentioned Butch before, but you and Bobby were very
close. He was a dear
friend
of mine, you know. Yeah. 18 years I managed him, you know. So
and helped him reunite with his daughter.
yes, Nancy.
So.
Which was it was weird. It was like an indirect thing. Bobby always said to me, try to contact this woman because I think she might be my daughter. And so it was years trying to do that, and finally got through to that woman, and they did the DNA test or the paternity test, whatever. And it wasn't a match, but then it was just like, you know, a couple weeks, I think, after that. It's funny how the planets out there work. Or God, or whatever everybody believes in, it's mm-hmm. this woman calls him up out of the blue and goes, I want nothing from you, but I think I'm your daughter. Mm. And so he met her, and they met each other at the airport. He's just looking at each other. They knew, you know, she mm-hmm. resembles him so much. But you could see that, but Bobby at that point was like, you know, after the second person, you know, he was like, I should have had my DNA laminated in my wallet, is what he was saying. but his daughter Nancy was a godsend to him. Because Bobby had a little boy that he lost that drowned in a pool, when, you know, and Bobby was very weird around children after that. When I first met him, my daughter and, mm-hmm. you know, my daughter was little and children annoyed him. But, you know, when this reunion came to be, all of a sudden he had a daughter, he had grandchildren, and he would go there and visit them at their home in Washington State. And he was grandpa. And it
and
just
made the last,
was the greatest.
The last
10 years he had. His last 10 years was, you know, and they wish, you know, I mean, God, you know, she wishes it could have been longer. We all do, you know, but the topper on that story is before Bobby died, when he knew he was, you know, he had leukemia, they were talking about this thing that either he read or she read. And long story short, to this day, his daughter Nancy wears a ring with a diamond on it that is made from Bobby's ashes. There's a company that does that.
Oh,
So she's got him with her at all times. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and this is one of the things that, again, how you approach your job. Not only are the fans just fans to you, you're one of us, right? You get the same thrill from meeting
absolutely.
Our idols. But these people that you represent, they're not just your clients; they're your friends, and in some cases, almost an extension of your family. I think it really is.
You know, Metalark's daughter used to tell me, you know, that Metalark considered me family, and it was so sweet of him. You know, I knew him since I was a little kid.
Metalark Lemon, we're talking of the Harlem
Metalark Lemon, the Harlem Globetrotters, you know, the you can't say Harlem Globetrotters without saying Metalark Lemon. Like he was
exactly.
He was the top, you know, clown prince of basketball. And as a kid, I made a phone call to Bobby Hunter, who was one of the Globetrotters. He was listed in the New York directory. And I said, can I come down and meet you? He says, yeah, why don't you come to the game? I went to the game. He said, okay, great. Meet me at downstairs at, you know, I'm coming down from my hotel. It's across from the garden. He says, you'll go with me in there. Took me in there. I was 10 years old, 11 years old, something like that. I mean, this day and age, people would go, oh, what's behind that? You know, but it wasn't. It was a celebrity being nice to a kid. And that's really what that was. And so he takes me there and he walks me into the locker room. And there's Metalark and there's Curly and there's Jackie Jackson and all the Globetrotters. And I'm taking pictures and I'm in heaven. And then they're ready to go out on the court. And Bobby turns to the guy, what do they call that guy? The trainer guy, the guy who's, you know, give them rub downs, whatever shoulders and that guy. And he says to him, he says, give Stu a towel. Just let him walk out with us. And next thing I know, ladies and gentlemen, the Harlem Globetrotters, Madison Square Garden, and they're walking across the court, followed by this little fat kid with long hair. That's me, and I'm at the end of the line, and I'm sitting on the end of the bench watching the Globetrotter game. I mean, it was just, you know. So I know these guys from when I was a kid, and then later in years, you know, Metalark just never forgot me, and we would talk. And then the convention stuff started happening, and I brought him out to conventions. And then he did his last book, and he called me up. He says, I want you to be my publicist. And I said, cool. And I got him some quotes from, I don't know, Jerry Lewis and Bill Cosby and people, you know, I talked to their publicists. And I went on all of his New York interviews with him. I went to the radio shows. I went to Letterman with him. And he put me in his book as one of the – all the celebrity quotes in the front of his book. Which is called Trust Your Next Shot. And I'm in there as a quote from me. He put like a Hollywood agent or something under it to justify me.
Big time Hollywood agent. Oh, that's great. So how did you get involved in management? And it seems like from a young age, you were just reaching out to people anyway. Your father was a hypnotist, right?
My father, if you've ever heard a hypnotist on the Howard Stern show, who went under the name, the stage name of Dr. Marshall King, that was my dad. That is my dad.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you were
and
in the
Stern
game.
Stern loved him.
Yeah, Stern would love. Oh, absolutely. He was great too. Your dad
he was
but
scared
you were
of him.
In the game. You scared him, but you were.
He was
in the game
he used to say. He used to say, "Dr. King, don't put the whammy jam on me."
The whammy jam. But now
was,
you were
in the TV commercials
before Stern.
Yeah, from when I was little, I loved Laurel and Hardy when I was 7 years old. You know, I used to watch them on TV. They were on Channel 11. They used to show them or something, and. I found out my mom came to me one day at 7 because here I am dressing up as Laurel and Hardy and, you know, just doing shtick in the house, you know. And she got me a little derby and a little mustache that glued on, you know, and I'm doing my my little bits. And so my mom comes to me one day and she goes, there's a Laurel and Hardy club. And I said, really? well, tell me, what is it? She goes, it's called the Sons of the Desert. And it's this organization. Mm. And she says, but it says here in the paper, it says that it's only for adult men. There's no children allowed in there. They don't even bring wives to it. It's like the Laurel and Hardy film, Sons of the Desert. It's a convention, and they watch Laurel and Hardy films, and they have, you know. So she looks at this thing, and she goes, and it says that one of the guys who puts this on, one of the guys lives in Yonkers here with us, lives somewhere in Westchester. Then she reads further. She goes, wait a minute. It says he lives in our building. I said, what? And she says, wait a minute, he lives down the hall. He lived on the same floor. On the down. What are the odds? So yeah. I dress up as Ollie. You know, I'm 7 years old. And I go zooming down the hallway. I don't know if you ever had that situation, but in those days, you know, you come out of your apartment door, you're in your socks, you're a kid, mm-hmm. and you go running slide. And you slide yeah. on your socks. Yeah. Oh, you knew that. Good. I knock on the door and I go, I want to be in the Laurel and Hardy Club. And he's looking at me like, where's your mom? You know? And so I bring my mom down and he explains to her, it's only adult men. He goes, we do a banquet once a year. He goes, and I can have him come into the banquet. You and your husband can bring him down to the banquet and you can go. And I said, okay, that's great. Great. I'm in. So he says, because then the wives and, you know, everybody comes to the banquet. So I go to the banquet, and Mrs. Stan Laurel is there. And I'm dressed up as Stan. You know, I've got my little derby hat on and my bow tie, you know, and I walk with the Stan Laurel walk, you know, that sloping kind of thing with the arm swinging. I watch the movies a million times, and I scratch my head, and I do the cry. And she is in heaven. Because she just lost her husband 2 years before that. And she looks at this little seven-year-old doing this impersonation of Stan, and she hugged me, and she gave me a kiss on the cheek. And she was just – I have pictures of her, you know. It just made her laugh. So around that time, my mom said, okay, let's see if maybe I can get you. You like to do this stuff. I'll try to get you a manager to do TV commercials. Maybe you'll go to a couple auditions. Long story short, I ended up doing about this little series of 5 Tootsie Roll commercials. And then, you know, did more commercials up until I was maybe about 9 when I turned to my mom and I said, listen, I just want to be a kid. You know, I'm getting in, you know, kids are picking on me at school, you know, hey, commercial boy, you know, and then, you know, they start fights with you, you know. And so I was like, I would just want to be a kid. So she didn't push me. She wasn't a stage mom. But an interesting thing to note, here I am, 7 years old. I did these 5 Tootsie Roll commercials. In the Tootsie Roll commercial, I remember shooting one where there was the main character in it. You know, we were like a little gang of kids, like a little Rascals kind of looking bunch they put together. There's maybe 5 of us. And we did these 5 different commercials, Tootsie Pops, Tootsie Roll. And so in this one particular commercial, they were all about the guys who work at Tootsie and the Tootsie factory, and they're unsafe coming home at night because the kids jump them for the Tootsie Rolls. So there's this one spot where all I remember, and I remembered it growing up my whole life. This is 1967, okay? I'm 7 years old. My whole life I'm remembering that I saw the crew plowing, like plucking out a manhole cover from this city block, this, you know, residential block, and replacing it with a guy, the actor, going down the ladder a little bit into it with a hat, a hard hat, with a fake, like, styrofoam manhole cover on top of it. So it looked like, the scene looked like he was, you know, sticking his head up out of the sewer, and the thing was on top of his thing, and he was hiding out from the kids, and he looked left and right. And I just remembered this scene, you know. Another scene, he was in a tree at the end of the commercial, and we were all screaming at him, you know, with flashlights, because it was at night. It wasn't until a couple of years ago, and I don't know if you caught any of this on my postings, but it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I decided to go to YouTube and put in 60s Tootsie Roll commercial. I said, what the hell I got to lose?
Okay,
well,
yeah.
All of a sudden, these start coming up, and there I am. Now, not only There I Am, but the guy who was in the manhole was Gene Wilder.
This was
a year before he was the producers. This was the year before he did the producers, so he didn't take off yet. He did these commercials. And the other ones that he wasn't on camera in, he was narrating those.
I was
blown away. Here, Willy Wonka is one of my favorite movies. The producers, I mean, I love this guy. And I had no idea. I wish to God my mom was alive to tell her, you know, look at this. Mm. I did a commercial. I did five commercials with Gene Wilder. Who knew?
You made his career.
Who knew?
You made his career. You got the Stuart Hirsch bump.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
But it was
working,
you know,
your
so
magic
that was part
at that young of an age.
So it's so funny, you know. Like, so my mom did that, you know, with me, and she had me do my Oliver Hardy thing again on Wonderama. Sonny Fox was the host. Wonderama was a children's show in the 60s. Bob McAllister later hosted it, but Sonny Fox was the 60s host. And I came out and surprised Chuck McCann, who was coming out doing a Laurel and Hardy bit of his own, and they stood me behind him, surprised him on camera live, and that was fun. So that was me as a little kid. So that's kind of, you know, I wasn't your average kid growing up. And then when I was 13 years old, I got on my newspaper at junior high school, and the teacher's going around the room going, you cover this football game, and you talk to this teacher, and he says to me, what do you want to do? And I said, can you give me a column to do celebrity interviews? And he said, what? And I said, please? And he said, sure, go ahead. And he gave me this column. He gave me one space on the back of the paper. And I made phone calls. And in those phone calls, 1973-74, I interviewed Emmett Kelly Sr. I interviewed the Three Stooges. I interviewed James Cagney. The Mel Blanc, the people that I talked to, I mean, I got Cagney. I don't want to take. I know this is a only an hour. I got so much to tell. You know, it's funny because you're
like
getting stuff out of me. What's that?
Oh, we have about 8 minutes left. But keep going. Stuff that
I'm so sorry. But
yeah.
But you know what it is, man? Is these stories I've never told in any of the other interviews I've done. They just came out of me with you, you know. So go ahead. I don't want to cut you off. But the Cagney one, I got him. My timing was right before they gave him the American Film Institute Award, and he was coming out of retirement. That was absolute luck, you know.
Yeah.
But I won't go into that. You tell me.
Well,
tell me what you got.
Okay, so here's the thing is I think we're going to have to do another one with you. I maybe, you know, in time for the next chiller because there's so much, Stuart, that we haven't touched on. Disco Toilet, something that somebody – it's possibly the most perfect song ever written, I think is what someone has quoted been saying about it. Disco Toilet. Your work with Tiny Tim.
Sure,
Mr.
I did
Friendly,
a comeback record for Tiny.
And that was 95, I believe. 90. So I definitely feel like we could fill another hour with your Zelig like experiences.
You know,
growing
I have a friend
and,
who calls me Zelig. That's so funny. I have a friend who
I've been called Zelig too.
Nickname.
Because I grew up, my father was a sports writer, and he was on CBS FM radio, Talk comes from. Yeah. And so
that's amazing.
So I was
such a piece of history. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was around celebrities, sports figures and other celebrities. In fact, we also have another connection with Uncle Floyd, because I know you're very close with Uncle Floyd.
Sure.
And my dad did an Uncle Floyd way back in the 80s, you know, so.
Oh, that's so cool.
I think we'll have to do another hour. We'll go through all this again.
Did anybody call in? I'm just curious. I hope I didn't just run my mouth through this whole
There was one. Yes, one mutual friend of ours who threatened to call in, but no, I don't think anyone did.
Okay.
I also bank on a lot of people listening to this the next day because thankfully it does get archived and it can always be listened to again.
Cool.
But this has been a blast.
That's very nice.
My pleasure. You're amazing, man. This is so much fun. let's go through how people can contact you if they would like. So you have a Facebook page.
I have a Facebook page, which is, Stuart Hirsch, and you'll see me there. My email is the1960s, which is T as in Tom, H as in Henry, E as in Edward, and then the number is 1960 and the letter S, so it looks like it says the1960s, @AOL.com. That is my email if you need to reach me. So that's – and let me just give you a full plug for Chiller. Chiller is the weekend of April 29th to May 1st. It's at the Parsippany Hilton Hotel. It is a guaranteed incredible time. There are so many wonderful stars there to meet and see and take pictures with. I personally am doing this Zoom reunion, as we mentioned at the top of the call, but I'm also bringing in the wonderful Karen Dotrice, who played the original Jane Banks in Mary Poppins, the one with Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke. She was Jane.
Yep.
And she was in all those scenes, and she danced on the rooftops, and she was all through it. Spoonful of Sugar, she was in every scene, and she's making her first East Coast convention appearance at Chiller during that weekend. I'm bringing her in, and I'm bringing in the wonderfully talented Diane Salinger, who was best known as Simone, the waitress in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yep.
And if you remember her from that, she is coming in her waitress outfit to take pictures.
That's awesome. And I love connections. So I love the fact that at the beginning of Batman Returns, Tim Burton reunites Paul Reubens and her to be the Penguin's parents at the beginning of Batman Returns. I have to throw my nerd cred out there, and I love connections.
That is a fact. And given just the word connections, when I told Diane that Karen was going to be there, she said, "Oh my God, I worked with her father, Roy Dotrice, in The Scarlet Letter." I said, "Oh my God." She said, "Yeah." She said, "I was at her house when she had her second child." I'm like, "Wow." So they know each other, and I just happened to put these two together that I'm bringing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a YouTube channel? Because I know during the pandemic, someone like you who lives on going out to concerts and karaoke and whatnot, you took it upon yourself to drive and record driving around empty New York. And I know they're on your Facebook page. Do you have a YouTube channel that we can watch those on?
A friend of mine took one of those drives and put it onto YouTube. So you can find that under my name. Make sure you got the right spelling for my name, people. It's S-T-U-A-R-T, and the last name is H-E-R-S-H, like Hershey, without the E-Y, because both Stewart and Hirsch can be spelled different ways. Commonly. But, yeah, the drives, if you friend me on Facebook, well, then you can see all the drives. They're on my wall, and you can scroll down. But in the height of the pandemic, when nobody was leaving their houses, I was going out of my mind, and I said, "I'm going beyond this TV. I live 15 minutes from New York City. I'm locking my doors on my car, and I'm going to tape for the first time a piece of duct tape and put my phone on my windshield and take a drive through New York City live on Facebook." And I did it about a half a dozen times, and right now it's something to really look at because it's now really – I documented accidentally a piece of history, and so many people told me that they lived vicariously through those drives because they couldn't leave their houses. They were so afraid of COVID. And I felt here I was safe in my car in the greatest city in the world and going through Times Square and seeing not a soul in the street except the police on the corners, but all the lights are still flashing. Was something that was scary and unforgettable at the same time, and I've got it in my drives.
I hate to interrupt, we have less than a minute.
Yep. Thank you, Hercules.
I'm sorry.
That's a great way to leave it, though, because you know what? The fact that you said that helped other people through the pandemic. I mean, again, like I said before, you deliver joy, and it's everything you do. You're Mr. Peace
yes.
and Love. Nothing. You're unflappable.
Thank you.
That is why I call you the Great One. I know Jackie Gleason is the original one, but you're the reigning king.
Thank you.
Yeah, next time we have you on, we're going to talk about the John Lennon picture because I think that's a great story. Enjoy the rest of your Beatles
sure.
convention weekend. Folks, thank you for
okay.
listening. Go visit Stuart at Chiller.
And thank you, Hercules.
Being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hercules.
Thank you, John.
And life, folks, it is, it's what happens when you're busy making other plans. So go out and
yes,
live
absolutely.
Your life.
Okay, God bless. Take care.
God bless.